Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
What's your name, son?
Danny Bernstein. I'm from Deerfield, Illinois.
Dan Bernstein on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
That's enough. Don't care. Not interested.
Insightful sports talk for your workday from one of Chicago's most respected radio professionals.
Professional what?
Professional piece.
Dan Bernstein.
Sucking the joy out of sports.
Middays on The Score.
We're broadcasting live from the Hyundai Score Studios. Visit your local Hyundai dealer and the first ever 8-passenger Hyundai Palisade. Dan Bernstein with you until noon today, and we are busy. We got some Bulls talk to start because I got to make some sense of what's going on right here, because it's difficult to understand some conflicting reports and some very strange human behaviors going on that we need to get to the bottom of. Lynn Bramer, our longtime dear friend, WXRT Midday host, is going to join us at 9:40 with some music ideas, how to put a playlist together, the psychology of the playlist quarantine, how to manage our music, and maybe remember John Prine, Chicago's own, a little bit too at 9:40 today. Mike Florio is with us at 10. We'll talk some Bears shortly thereafter, the Midday Midway at 10:40. We're going to talk to Kendra Andrews, who covers the Denver Nuggets for The Athletic Denver at 11, to talk about Arturis Karnishevas, who I actually remember very, very well as a terrific college basketball player. He's a really good European player, too. Probably should have been in the NBA. Was definitely good enough and would have been recognized as good enough to be in the NBA now. But he either is or isn't the front runner for Bulls executive vice president, czar of basketball, whatever they're going to call it. We're going to play Who Am I? At 11:20, and we're also going to visit today in our non-transitional series with Lawrence Holmes before he gets started. So this will be more of a traditional transition with him at 11:40. Plenty of surprises are along the way as well. 312-644-6767 is the number at WSCR The Score. You email us at Bernstein at 670thescore.com. You can send a text to the text zone at 67011. The text zone is brought to you by Rosen Hyundai of Algonquin. Save time. Shop online at rosenhyundai.com. When you text, we reply. Message and data rates may apply. Twitter is at Bernstein670, my personal Twitter. If you want to reach out there, is at Dan_Bernstein. You also must download the radio.com app.
Here's a pitch to Shelton, up and in, ball one. And Rosenberg's laughing. By the way, happy Passover to Al. And for all of our Jewish friends, we know this is the start of Passover. The Seders will start tonight, and be safe when you drive home from wherever you're spending that Seder. Here's the 1-0 to Shelton.
Now it's official. Will it always be? So it has been written, so shall it be done. The Ed Farmer, warning to the drunken Jews. Well, you know, you got to have cups. Yeah, there's four cups. You got to drink them. They're mandatory. And even if it's the fortified sweetened wine, you know, you still got to be careful. This will be the easiest drive home in the history of Passover. That I can predict. This is a memorable one where, as we pour out wine for the 10 plagues that have visited upon Egypt, we have an actual plague in which we are ensconced at the moment. When you download the Radio.com app, you can stream The Score on your mobile devices, interact with the show and the station on Facebook by liking the 670 The Score page. Jay Zawoski is our executive producer, and the Mexicutioner, Ray Diaz, is Mexicuting, as he does on the board. And Shane Reardon, also want to give him props for the help that he does as well. He's doing the job of like 15 people right now. So my head is just spinning thinking about the Bulls. You know, we talked all about Justin Zanuck yesterday. We got the full scouting report on him. And then we hear that the front runner might be Denver's nominal general manager, former Seton Hall star Arturis Karnišovas. Then we hear he maybe isn't because he hasn't even interviewed yet. And that's not the weirdest part. The weirdest part was the story that starts circulating yesterday. And what was the phrase? John Paxson would be willing to step aside. What don't we get about the idea of someone taking someone else's job? In any other business, now this gets back to this whole Bob Pulford thing. In any other business, when someone is hired in a position above you, they can tell you to not come to work anymore. They can tell you, you don't work there anymore. That's how this works in every other business. When somebody buys a company, when somebody appoints someone new in charge, or supposedly in charge of the company, in charge of a certain aspect of it, there is a... there's a masthead, there's a chart organizationally, there's a hierarchy that says this person is now in charge of what this person does and if this person does anything. So then to read, well, you know, he'd be willing to step down or away. If that, well, who cares? It's not about what someone's willing to, why, you don't have to be willing. No one asked him. But that's the thing. It sounds like they kind of are. And it sounds like he's choosing whether or not to, it's an abdication, like a requested abdication, more than it is a personnel change, like it would be at any other level of an organization. So before we get started here, I think it's really critical that we go back and listen to a chunk of what Casey Johnson said about, what, you know, an hour and 40 minutes ago. He was on with Mully and Haw on The Score's morning show, and he sort of laid down some of the parameters here, and I think it really informs our discussion. Before we jump ahead, let's get back to what he said, because he's pretty well plugged in here. Casey Johnson of Comcast Sports Chicago. And here's his take on where everything stands at the moment.
Jerry Reinsdorf, in my estimation, would never ask John to step down. That's just not how Jerry operates. So I we'll see where it goes, but I think John will have a role moving forward. Again, he's not going to get in the way. That's just the biggest takeaway. I think all of us can agree on that.
I think we do agree on that, Casey, and I think that's been, you've been reporting that all along, even when this process was initiated by John Paxson. I think it's been clear that he has said he'll do whatever's necessary, even if that means stepping aside. I think the tricky part comes with not knowing where, you know, the valuing the institutional knowledge that he offers, you know, his successor, essentially, and how stubborn, if that's the right word, he might be in insisting that the whoever is hired retains the coach, retains Jim Boylan, because we know that John Paxson has been a staunch defender of Jim Boylan and might even see ways that he can improve as a head coach. And yet, if you do change at the top, you assume that person is going to have in mind someone who he wants to install as the head coach.
Well, I think the summary of that dynamic of John's personality is accurate, David. But to me, we're focusing too much on John Paxson. John Paxson is not going to be the head of basketball operations here. Arturis Karnišovas or Justin Zanuck or somebody else is. So it doesn't matter really anymore what John thinks, because it matters to the extent this new person wants to filter it. But this new person is going to be making the decision on Jim Boylan. This new person is going to be making the decision on the direction of the franchise and the personnel moves that are made. And if this new person, if they bring him in and is worried about what how John Paxson is going to react to his decisions, then the Bulls have failed in this process, because you can't do that. You're looking to change this culture and you're looking to change the direction of this franchise. John Paxson is willingly stepping away in a lot of ways, in the sense that he doesn't want to do all those major decisions anymore. What he wants to offer is ways to help the Bull, this person succeed so that the Bulls win. That's what John Paxson wants. So to me, I understand the John Paxson angle is creating a lot of confusion and fans are tired of, you know, him hanging around and all this. I understand all that. To me, we got to get the focus off John Paxson. John Paxson is not going to be the head of Bulls basketball operations anymore. This new hire will be. So I know fans are skeptical of that. I get it. It's happening. I can't say it any more clearly than that. There's going to be a new head of basketball operations, and it's going to be Arturis Karnisovas, Justin Zanuck, or somebody that we have not been privy to know that the Bulls are going to interview yet.
Thank you. We're really overcomplicating this idea of somebody else coming in to have full power over an organization. And for him to say that Jerry Reinsdorf himself wouldn't ask John Paxson to leave, that's fine, but that's really not what's significant here. If they are doing it correctly, if they are hiring, what again, I think ideally is somebody who should have the title of president, and it shouldn't be the same title that John Paxson has right now. I don't know what's so difficult about this. If this person's in charge, he can say, John, you don't work here anymore. And you don't take the job unless you're able to say that. You don't take the job unless you are in charge. You don't take the job if this guy's going to be looking over your shoulder, or you have to be concerned about this guy whispering to the owner to have somebody looking over your shoulder in that regard. And initially, again, I understand the skepticism here. Here's a texter, 708, responding, Paxson's full of crap. Unless he resigns, he'll still be there with some sort of influence. It's not about a resignation. Whether it's Zanuck or Karnisovas, whoever is in charge should be allowed to tell everyone else in the organization underneath him if they work there or not. And if they don't, they can leave. That's what being fired is. When someone tells you, don't come to work anymore, you don't work here anymore. And yet still, this is something so strange because of the insularity of the Bulls organization. And I think part of it has just been the constant presence of John Paxson, the assumption that, no, Jerry Reinsdorf wouldn't fire him and say, you're out, John. You're out, Tom Hagen. You're not a wartime conciliary, Tom. You're out. That even if he wouldn't say it, the new guy has to be able to say it. And it sounds like that is indeed going to be the case. It's just hilarious, this idea of willingness to step away. If you have hired the person doesn't need willingness. It can be against that person's will. They are actually told to step away. And I'm told that Jay Zawoski says, I said it was Comcast Sports and instead of NBC Sports Chicago. Says you're watching too many White Sox classics. Yeah, that it's got to be the problem now. Just all that White Sox classic stuff that I've been watching has been driving home the old terms for everything. But seriously, like sometimes I feel like I'm completely crackers thinking about how this stuff goes down, where we've got these arrangements that are layered in a way that they just shouldn't be layered. And this is an opportunity to fix all that, just like the Theo Epstein hire was, just like that was. You bring a guy in. What do you want to do? You're in charge. Do what you want. Keep who you want. Get rid of who you want. Move people around. Change their roles and responsibilities. It's whatever you say is what we do. That's what this hire is supposed to be. I didn't think it was that difficult. 312-644-6767. Want to get your thoughts as well if you are similarly confused by some of these things. I literally laughed out loud when I saw that. It's like this you know, forehead slap of willing to step away. Willing to, because he wants what's best for the Bulls. If there's a new guy in charge, who cares? If he's sitting at home watching television, great, fine. It's lovely that he wants what's best for the Bulls. It doesn't matter what that person wants who's not doing the job anymore. What matters is what the new guy wants, and only what the new guy wants. And in a way, I think that's what Casey was saying. So conflicting as to whether or not it's Karnisovas as the front runner. And I do think it is. He said Karnisovas. I do, if I remember, at least when he was playing at Seton Hall, and you guys scored like 1,500 points or whatever it was for Seton Hall. He'd already been a pro in Europe, and then he came over, and then he went back and played. He was a decorated pro, very successful pro. I think two-time bronze medalist, I want to say, with Lithuania. But it was always Karnishevas, and I don't know. There's that little, what do they call it? There's like a serif on top of the S that I think denotes the fact that it's pronounced with a sh, like Sharunas Marcellonis isn't Sarunas. And actually, it was actually Sharunas Marcellonis that convinced Karnishevas to go and attend Seton Hall to try to get his profile built up in the United States rather than just staying in Lithuania. But that is a proud basketball country that has produced, what, Sabonis, Marcellonis, and many others, and Karnishevas is right in that group. I didn't know it was the same guy. Like, I saw the name, like, oh, that's a familiar name. And then I realized, yeah, he was at Seton Hall when I was still in college, and I don't think he was on the Final Four team that beat Duke, because that was the Andrew Gaze team. But I think the next year he was there, I think they had two Big East championships where he was one of their key contributors, and a guy who definitely, I think, in a modern scouting system, and this time he would have definitely gotten NBA consideration because there's a much greater appreciation for the skills that he had in the league that better understands the inside-outside game, the passing game, etc. But he appears to be well-regarded. A reminder at 11 that Kendra Andrews of The Athletic in Denver is going to tell us all about him and what he could bring to the Chicago Bulls. What do you think of all this? And just how we've gotten to the point where someone who is being replaced, or someone who is being installed, or someone being installed above, is being now saying, I'll be willing to step away. I don't care. The new guy in charge can say, you don't come to work anymore. 312-644-6767. It does appear that major change is on the way for the Bulls. And that's at least pretty cool. You've got the score.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Arturis Karnisovas is a leading candidate in the sense that he's a finalist, but he hasn't interviewed yet. So I don't know how you can call him a leading candidate when he hasn't interviewed yet. That's all I would say. Unless there was an interview yesterday that I'm not privy to. So I should also say that. I think job interviews are important. I do think that he's been on that radar a long time. I think he was one of the four first that was on the original list of four, and that Justin Zanuck was not. So you can read into that what you want. But I'm going to wait and see how the interview goes before I call him a leading candidate. I mean, he's a very attractive candidate. He's been on their list for a long time.
That's Casey Johnson of NBC Sports Chicago, pretty plugged in. And despite reports that Arturis Karnishevas is now the front runner for the head of the Bulls basketball business, they need to come up with a title finally so we can just call him that. But he says not necessarily so. What it does is it means that you need a complementary piece. Because just as we were talking yesterday about Zanuck, the general manager in Utah, that he's more of a cap contract negotiation side guy, where Arturis Karnishevas is more of the hardcore basketball in the gyms around the world, former player scouting side guy. And call me crazy, but you'd love to have both of hire both of them. You know, you can give one guy the title, but and would probably prevent the other guy from taking the job. But that's really what you need. You know, which if this thing is it ends up where it's supposed to be, where you have somebody like Masai Ujiri who's at the top of the organization. Obviously, that was the pipe dream. They would love to have had Masai Ujiri, but he wasn't going to be leaving there to come here in Toronto. If had you gotten a guy like Webster or Simon to be at the top of things, your next level guy, you'd then have a Karnishevis running your basketball scouting side. You then have a Zanuck running your negotiating cap side. But you're going to end up with some younger guys who are maybe up another slot on a team's hierarchy to come be in those positions. But you got to have everything covered. And my hope is that they probably do. A tweet here from Schmutzy who says that, and it actually sums up exactly sort of the insanity of all this. He says, glad to hear you're willing to leave the organization entirely if we think it would be best for the Bulls organization. You're fired, and your stuff is in a box on the curb outside, and your Uber will be here in 11 minutes. That's the way it works everywhere else, that when somebody comes in who is above you, that person can then decide whether you leave or not, and it's not up to you being magnanimous enough to say, well, if I will abdicate the throne to marry a commoner, I will walk away because I think this is best. I think these are really interesting times for how this is all being managed and how what we're learning about how the Bulls do some of their business here. 312-644-6767. For those who were saying that, you know, Kenny Williams stuck around, yeah, he did. But that just because Kenny Williams stuck around, it doesn't mean John Paxson has to if you're hiring someone in charge. They didn't put Rick Hahn in charge. They made him, they empowered him as general manager. They increased his power. That's the difference that I see in these comps to the White Sox business model and in their organizational flowchart. They didn't hire Rick Hahn from the outside and say, here you are, you now have the big chair and are in charge of making decisions in the organization. It is possible that were that to have happened, Rick Hahn would have told Kenny Williams, okay, I'm good. Get out of here. Might be a nice time for you to retire. Might be you can resign or retire, or you're going to be fired because you don't work here anymore. Not gonna work here anymore. That kind of thing. That didn't happen with the White Sox. It is possible that that is actually happening now. And that's why the situation is different. I know about family loyalty and all the insularity, and I know there's precedent for somebody having whatever job he wants and being allowed to be in charge of things. But until we know otherwise, I trust KC's reporting. I trust his connections. I trust what he's learned over time and his experience with this team. And if he says that it's not ultimately going to be up to John Paxson for what he decides to do and whether or not he decides what his job is, then that's cool by me. That would be the kind of thing that would lead me to believe that it's headed in the right direction. What I'm wondering is now, even if they do this, what it's going to take a while for the actual impact to be felt. Because first of all, there's a lot more hires that have to go down here. There's a lot more staffing that has to be done. So it's going to take time. It's going to take, you know, especially nobody's around. You can't really do anything. And I want to look back on the timetable when the Cubs did what they did. And obviously a baseball organization, you're dealing with so much more organizational infrastructure and so many more teams and the sheer numbers in a baseball organization dwarf anything going on in the NBA. So you'd think that an NBA operation could be lighter and a little more flexible in that regard and could be able to move a little bit faster. But you know how scouts are. They want to get a look with their own eyes. They want to make sure that they can say, you know, I've seen this guy. I don't care what the other scouts have said about him. It's now my job to get a look at him. They're going to start with a clean slate. The as long as it's not, you know, boiling. And I'm pretty happy that the only guy who was invested in Jim Boylan is going to be I don't know, kind enough to be walking out the door, because that's it for, I guess we should lament it, shouldn't we? That we're going to, we have to send Jim a lovely parting gift, send him something nice for the content that he's brought us and for the fact that he's going to be on an ignominious Mount Rushmore of Chicago coaches. But there's going to be somebody in here who I think knows what he's doing in a way that we haven't seen since Tom Thibodeau, without that kind of sort of personality pathology. But new eyes, fresh eyes on the organization from whoever and however, looking at what position everybody plays, what kind of system you're running, who plays with whom. There is talent here, and there is, I think, reason for some level of optimism that you can take the raw materials that are, that I know there's a lot of doom and gloom, and it's really easy to say that, oh, they suck and everything's awful and the Bulls are always bad. And then it gets to this weird sense of, you know, people don't want to play here and they've poisoned the waters. I think once you make these changes correctly and you are able to throw some sunlight on everything, throw the doors open, forget those reputations. Players have come. Players are flexible. You get Boylan out of here. You get rid of the time clock. I think those things repair themselves much faster than people want to believe. And the ongoing presence, the uninterrupted presence of you know, Paxson and Foreman, however you wanted to do it, the uninterrupted temporal chain of this regime has made that more difficult. And the big thing is I want from the top, it shouldn't be leaked, it shouldn't be handed to reporters. The best thing that Michael Reinsdorf can do is stand in front of the NBA world, stand in front of you and say it, and say this is a new day, and have it be true, because you have to make sure that you haven't retained, you know, it's funny that this somebody was calling the quarantine, what was it, like the great white people sourdough competition, because apparently it's just everybody's at home, like all white people are at home baking right now, and that's just sort of this new thing that's popped up in quarantine. It's the idea of the sourdough starter that you can keep no matter what, that you can keep from one bit of the next loaf of bread and it stays. You can have the same starter, that same, I forgot exactly the term for it. I think it's just called the sourdough starter, but it's whatever that the yeasty bacteria stuff that from the very first time the bread is baked, it can go literally generationally. And that's what the Bulls have been doing, that for too long, everything has been baked into their way of doing business with these same reputations and these same investments. And they move some job titles around. They change a little bit here and there. This is that chance for Michael Reinsdorf to say, we are breaking clean and we are entering a new time. And this is what it's going to look like. And this is what we're going to do. Anything you thought about this organization before, outside of the players we have under contract, anything that you assumed about our way of doing business, et cetera, is now different. And you throw all that stuff out. I think it'd be great to get a fresh start in that regard. An email from Mac. Max says, I think fans are comparing this to the Ted Phillips Bears dynamic. It's optics, while not necessarily reality. It would be easier to just get rid of Paxson, but as long as he's not involved in basketball ops, it doesn't matter. They need a new voice and a new set of eyes. It sounds like they're close to that. Let's see what happens. Yeah, I just think it's different because of Paxson's history. That if I really want to critique the analogy to Ted Phillips and the Bears, Ted Phillips was a longtime accountant. He wasn't the guy that made the shot to win the title. That's different. And that always sort of hurt him. There was a time when Ted Phillips was more involved in the football side than he should have been. And he was sidelined. He was in his office. Ted Phillips' office is overlooks the practice field. It's right there. And he probably couldn't name you half the roster. He might know what they're paying guys, he might have some interest in how they're managing cash flow vis-a-vis the salary cap, but that was an actual successful job change and marginalization where people said, you know, Ted shouldn't be as involved as he is in the football side of things. And people eventually realized Yeah, you're right. But you're never going to change that no matter what Pax is doing. He's still the guy that made the shots. He's still the guy. So there is a different gravity there. There's a different feel. He was an assistant coach. He was a broadcaster. He's been at different levels of the organization. To me, when the Blackhawks told Bob Pulford to get out of the building, that is the most similar analogy you can get. I keep getting back to that. That the ubiquitous presence in the Blackhawks, he would coach, he would GM, he would go from one to the other, he would fire a coach, he'd decide to coach, he would general manage when he wanted, he could do what any hallway, any office, he could do whatever he wanted. What changed with the Blackhawks was when he literally left that building and went to work for a different business. And if Michael Reinsdorf had a different business, where you could say, John, if this is something else you want to do, that's fine. I don't know if they just give him a golden parachute and a lovely retirement package and let him travel the world when it's safe to do so. But you can have a guy leave. He doesn't have to say, yeah, I'm willing to step down to the best interest of the Bulls. No one cares. If somebody's being hired above you, that person could tell you, turn in your key card. We've got this, and it's okay. Yes, the 815 and the 708 texter point out it's either called starter dough or mother dough. Thank you. And by the way, what the hell is going on with the whole baking thing? You can't get flour at the grocery. The only things that are missing are flour and paper products. You know, all the toilet paper's gone, all the Lysol's gone, and all the all-purpose flour is gone. It's the strangest damn thing. I guess it's like, Jay, what we were talking about yesterday, the defaulting to controlling things and making something and feeling good about creating something warm. It's got to be it, but I don't know what's going on with white people and baking lately.
My daughter has already baked 2 loaves of bread. My friend Sarah is hosting on Zoom how to cook bread classes for the kids in a neighborhood. I think it's part of it too is what's something I've wanted to do that I haven't had time to do. And I think that's part of it, too. It's like, I don't have any more excuses to pick up this guitar or learn how to bake bread or whatever. And that's why, I know that's why I've been doing more things like that, just because I finally have time to do some stuff.
Yeah, my guitar is laughing at me. It's sitting downstairs, and I want to, but I haven't. I think I will. Like, baking, I have no interest in baking. None. Because you have to get everything just right. It's chemistry more than anything else. Everything has to be properly measured, and there's no fun in that. Although
no.
My sister says the difference between, you know, those of us who cook and those of us who bake. She said the baker gets the ta-da moment. You get to walk in with this thing, this cake, or this thing that you've made, rather that you've just sort of been slaving over, and then you plate it from the stove. And I don't know. It's got no allure to me, and if people are enjoying it, fine. Although, of course, it times up with Passover, when now this is the one time we can't have any normal baked goods for the next week. So that's fine.
Well, I want to say, too,
unleavened things.
Well, my guitar laughs at me is a lesser-known George Harrison song. That's the first thing I thought when you said that.
Right. Well, he has multiple guitars, right? George Harrison does.
So this one's crying. This one's laughing.
Right. Right. This one's gently weeping. This one's sort of laughing to itself. Then he's got the one openly lampooning him. He has another guitar, the one other side of the room screaming at him in horrible, horrible pain. He just never wrote songs about those other guitars, right?
He might have, just their B-sides, you know.
Yeah, and I don't know how you feel in passing of John Prine.
Oh, God.
But when I notice the number of musicians that I like or respect who are genuinely upset about this, I can't be presumptuous or pretentious enough to claim that I'm some John Prine fan, but I clearly, you know, Maywood's own, the Maywood Mailman, I clearly recognize his influence and appreciate and understand his influence when so many people I like and respect are genuinely broken up about his death.
I am a huge John Prine fan, and it took me a while in life to discover his music. I don't know why. He was always sort of on the periphery of the stuff I liked. But like finally 2 or 3 years ago, I really started listening to him, and he quickly ascended to the top of my list. I got to see him live at the Chicago Theater a couple years ago. This one really hit me very hard. And I know he had been sick with coronavirus for, I think, 10 days before he passed. So I'd had some time to prepare myself. But you see you mentioned it, how many artists have reached out and said things. If you follow anybody on Instagram or Twitter, or whatever, any Americana artist, everyone's doing tributes today. I saw Brandi Carlile played one of his songs, Summer's End, and Natalie Maines from the Dixie Chicks played Angel from Montgomery with her children. It's just, it's incredible to see all these people saying what his music meant. And it's sort of a shame it has to happen after he passed, that he gets the recognition he deserved, but it almost feels like that's sort of the way he would want it to be.
We're going to continue to talk a little bit about music. Our friend Lynn Bramer, the midday man at WXRT, is going to give us some tips for playlists, for mood enhancement, for what sounds good when. The tips for music in quarantine to sort of help us feel better about all of it. He does, I know, because I've been listening to my, 25 years we've been sort of concurrent here at whatever this company is for which we've worked and continue to work. Look forward to having a conversation with my friend Lynn Bramer. He's coming up next on The Score. Dan Burstein with you 9 to noon, Monday through Friday, live and local on Sports Radio 670 WSCR, The Score. This is one of those times where you're reminded in times of extended difficulty how much music can matter and how much a properly curated playlist can manage your mood a little bit, along with copious amounts of red wine and whatever else you might have on hand. Lynn Bramer is on Twitter, at Lynn Bramer. He's the midday man for WXRT, 93XRT. And he joins us now on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. How are you hanging in there, Lynn?
You know what? There are great advantages to living your life in sweatpants.
I did that anyway, though. You know, that's, I have to say,
yeah,
that's
you know
not
what?
That
I,
much of a change.
I used to, you know, dress down for radio until Andy McDowell, who was supposed to do a phoner, showed up in person at the studio. And I felt so stupid in little gym shorts and a torn T-shirt. And she was dressed for TV. I said, you know what? No more sweatpants and shorts at work. So I actually do the hard work of putting on pants. How are you doing, Dan?
I'm hanging in. I'm doing okay. I was made a big vat of chicken soup yesterday for the Seder tonight. The moment I get off the air today, I'm going to resume cooking, and we're doing Seder via Zoom. However we can do it, however many people we can hook in, it's going to be a memorable one.
That's great. I'm actually making chicken soup because that's what I do almost every other day. Can never have too much. Well, you know, you're talking about.
No, you certainly can't.
You're talking about looking for comfort through the music you listen to. And, you know, we have a great advantage at XRT where we can lean on our library. And it's been amazing to me how much listeners have focused on lyrics they've heard hundreds of times. But there's sort of a new attention to what they're listening to. And the way songs are affecting them is completely different these days on the radio. And you see it in social media, the way they react. And this is a time really not to wonder if this is the moment for you to explore free jazz. This is the time for you to go back to some of your old favorites. This is the time to wrap yourself in your favorite album that you listen to in your dormitory. But I did sit down and think of some songs that actually we've been playing over the last couple of weeks that have stood out, that have brought people comfort, that appeal to people. You know, some of the songs we play are a little bit jokey, like The Police, Don't Stand So Close to Me, or Georgia Satellites, Keep Your Hands to Yourself, you know, musical public service announcements. But for me, it's songs like The Kinks' Better Things. I once observed that Ray Davies has written a song for just like Randy Newman has written a song for every occasion. And the song Better Things goes, here's wishing you the bluest sky and hoping something better comes tomorrow, hoping all the verses rhyme and the very best of choruses too. Follow all the doubt and sadness. I know better things are on their way. Bob Marley, Three Little Birds, song XRT has played forever, song where the refrain is, because every little thing going to be all right makes you feel like it will. I don't know if you've heard this. You probably have. Israel Kamikovole does a medley just singing with a ukulele, Over the Rainbow and What a Wonderful World. Just a little medley, very simply presented, with two of the most iconic compositions of the 20th century. Now, I tried not to veer too much into songs that people, you know, have never heard, new songs especially, but I had to mention The Lone Bellow. They have a new song. It's a beauty. It's called Count on Me. You can count on me if I can count on you. I did a Linsbin essay about what it's like to have spring break in 2020 with everybody staying at home. And after the piece, I played the Youngbloods. This is kind of an oldie. The Youngbloods, Get Together, Smile on Your Brother. Everybody get together, try to love one another right now. Michael Bean, late lead singer of a band called The Call, has a song called Let the Day Begin, with the lyric, here's to the doctors and their healing work. Here's to the loved ones and their care. Here's to the strangers on the streets tonight. Here's to the lonely everywhere. And I noticed you opened the segment with a bumper from David Bowie, Heroes. People love hearing that song right now because they relate it not to the typical heroes you might think of in mythology, but to the people at grocery stores who are stocking shelves as fast as people are removing as much toilet paper as they can get their hands on. There's a lot out there for you to listen to make you feel better. And I heard you and Jay talking about John Prine, who I must have seen 20, 25 times. Sometimes you just need a laugh, and his whole catalog is worth delving into at any time. But he has a song called Dear Abby, where he asks advice, and it's a song for when you need advice and a good laugh. Maybe finally I should mention the Beatles' Golden Slumbers medley from Abbey Road. It's just one of those perfect songs for all times, for whatever's going on.
We're talking with Lynn Bramer here on the Dan Bernstein Show, 9 to noon, Monday through Friday on The Score. Lynn is the midday man on WXRT. You'll be able to hear him coming up in just about 10 minutes or so. Appreciate you taking the time. And I'm continually interested in the psychology of the moment. Jay and I were talking about desire to bake. People want to bake. People want to cook. People want to find comfort. And my own kids, you know, I've got a freshman in high school and a senior in high school. They both have been craving the foods from their childhood. They want mac and cheese. They want to make, there's a pasta that I made when they were toddlers. They wanted the, you know, chicken nuggets and ranch and lima beans that I used to make in a pinch every once in a while that just sort of felt good to them. And when you say listen to what you listen to in your college dorm, I've been falling back. Like for me, it was the music I listened to driving from Chicago to Durham and going through, you know, Indianapolis, through Louisville, through Tennessee and Kentucky and into the Smoky Mountains. And it was always REM. It was either Murmur or Reckoning or some of that jangly atmospheric stuff that I have found myself drawn to. Did you see the video, Lynn, of Michael Stipe from wherever he is in Soho or wherever, where he took singing the song Underneath the Bunker? That it's a little known off of Murmur, sort of an odd song, and now it has a resonance to it where it's these simple lyrics. There's only like four lines in the whole song, and I hadn't, like you say, I listened to lyrics again. I was like, whoa, I hadn't thought of it that way, but I've been delving back into some of the REM catalog.
Well, REM was a very formative band in my early years in radio and certainly at WXRT. It's interesting you would pick REM because there you are driving from Chicago into the South, and they really were evocative of kind of a new South musically. You know, the South had been associated with the Allman Brothers Band, Lynyrd Skynyrd, and here's this band from Athens, Georgia, that's changing the whole dynamic of the way you think of Southern rock. I thought you were going to mention Michael Stipe. Last night I saw a video of him on Stephen Colbert doing a new song, Bare Bones, just him and some electronic stuff in the background. And now I'm going to forget the name of it, but it's something like The Time to Love is Now. I'm paraphrasing it because, of course, my brain is shot. But really simple song, really beautiful song for this moment.
I'm glad you mentioned Bob Marley, and I'm glad that's part of your list too, because reggae always sounds like roots reggae always inherently sounds good. There's some sort of automatic endorphin trigger with roots reggae, but there's an awareness in some of those lyrics and a warmth in the lyrics that's more palpable now. So I'm certainly glad he found his way to the list. Is any other reggae stuff? I know there's you know, Toots and the Maytals and some other more like maybe ska rocksteady style things, because that's a type of music that sounds good when things start.
Well, don't forget Jimmy Cliff, the soundtrack album to The Harder They Come, and that actually is a collection of different reggae artists from back in the day, including an artist that was the first dance at my wedding, a very simple song by the Melodians called By the Rivers of Babylon. You should check that out. That is an absolute beauty. And it rolls in the credits of High Fidelity, the John Cusack film that cuts a little too close to the music nerd bone for me.
Lynn, I know you got to get to work. Best of health, and thanks, and appreciate the playlist suggestions, man. Be well.
Well, thank you for having me on, Dan. And, you know, I'm thinking of everybody over there at the Score, but I know your family and thinking of them and hoping they're well, and you take care of yourself.
See you, Lynn. Best to you and yours as well. That is Lynn Bramer. He is the Midday Man at WXRT. I should mention, we are going to compile his suggested playlist in full as a Spotify playlist, and we are going to post it on Twitter from the @670thescore account, so you can have it there for yourself and have that little accompaniment. May have something on while I'm cooking this afternoon, while I'm getting all the meat simmering for our Seder, or what everybody's calling a Zader tonight, as they're doing it on Zoom. We'll see how this works. I don't know if it's going to. I am hopeful that it will. We've got a lot coming up for the remainder of this show. Mike Florio in just a couple of moments. Got some, you know, real talk with the Bears after that, because something is shaping up here that is getting kind of obvious, and it's soaked in after a while. And the more I hear people talk about it, and it has to do with the quarterback competition and the way it's being discussed and how it's being arranged. We will do the midday midway as we always do at 10:40. Then coming up at 11, we're going to get an in-depth scouting report on the potential head of Bulls basketball, as Kendra Andrews of the Athletic Denver will tell us all about Arturis Karnishevas. We're going to play Who Am I? Coming after that. Also got to get to this sound from this idiot Mike Gundy, who just absolutely showed his ass with some comments that were jaw-droppingly tone-deaf. And thankfully, it's his bosses have since pushed back a little bit in sort of a gentle way, because, you know, God forbid you upset the most powerful person on a college campus. And then we will do an actual transition with Lawrence Holmes coming up at 11:40 before he starts his show at noon. We'll get a chance to touch base and reconnect with him. But next up is football talk, pro football talk. Mike Florio, keep it here. You've got the Score.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during O'Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 oh. O'Reilly Auto Parts.